This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
I'm having a blast out there just playing basketball, and it's obviously working, says Steph Curry. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We simply cannot ignore Steph in the MVP voting anymore. He's top three. Top three. I mean, there's Embiid game for game has been the best, but been hurt. LeBron is up there, been hurt. James Harden, same thing. KD was very good when he was active, same thing. Now, who's left? There's Jokic, there's Lillard, and there's Steph Curry, and there's Giannis. But Steph is putting up numbers almost identical to what he did in 15-16 when he won MVP and his team won 73 games, set the record. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. He made 10 threes and dropped 49 last night against the Sixers. Steph did. His 11th straight 30-point game. That's the longest streak by a player aged 33 or older. By the way, to me, the news is Steph Curry's older than 33. He's 33? But it's the longest streak of 30 points or more by a player 33 years or older since forever, since the Big Bang in NBA history. And it's the longest by a Warrior of any age since Wilt Chamberlain in 1964, where I think they gave you 10 points for every shot you took. I mean, Wilt played through a crazy offensive era, and he was at a size mismatch for everyone. I'm having a blast out there just playing basketball. As I told you earlier, Steph said, it's obviously working. But listen to what people are saying about Steph now in the MVP conversation. Tim Legler was on earlier here on ESPN Radio. Of course, our NBA analyst at ESPN, among them, with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Listen to Legler.
He has to be. Now that they are back again, winning games, and this is a team that continues to climb, I mean, they have a possibility here to maybe even avoid a play-in game. If that happens with what he is doing, if you don't put Steph Curry certainly in your top five, maybe some people would have him in their top three. I think it's ludicrous to not put him there when you look at the way he has to carry this team with what they have from a roster standpoint.
I totally agree. I say top three. Listen, before the season started, I thought Luka Doncic would win MVP and his main competition would come from Steph, and that the reason Steph really wouldn't ultimately win it is his team wouldn't be good enough because they brought in Kelly Oubre and this one and that one. They didn't have enough shooting. They don't have any other player on the team who's even an average shooter for his position. By the way, most 30-point games, 33 or older in NBA history. You have the graphic up on ESPN Plus, which if you don't have it, trust me, you should get it. Like, you will not be sorry. You will not know how you lived without it. Steph Curry has 11 straight. Kobe had 10 straight in 2012. And Michael Jordan had 7 straight in 96 twice. The Steph streak's still going. And the question is, given the fact, like, it's weird because his PER, his player efficiency rating, is Hollinger's stat. Which is, you know, it's like, there's no perfect stat, but it's a pretty good look at like how efficient a guy is offensively. His PER stats is like 5 points under his MVP campaign of 15-16. But when I look at his numbers, they all are almost identical. I don't know why this is. He had a steal more a game, but I don't think a steal more a game would jump your PER 5 points. He also shot better from three. He took one fewer three-point attempt a game, but shot about... I think he was about 12% or 12%. He's taking a little bit over 12 threes a game. He took a little over 11 threes that year. He's hitting 43% of his threes this year. He was hitting 45% of his threes that year. I don't think that makes up for the 5-point difference in PER, but something does. At any rate, but when you look at his numbers, they're practically identical to that season. So what's going on? Is he as good as he was then? The funny thing in basketball or in sports, when we do these comparisons player to player, even if we're comparing them to an earlier version of himself, you really can't do it without the context of the league in which they're playing. I remember reading Bill James when I was 13 years old. Someone got me a Historical Baseball Abstract, Volume 2, for my bar mitzvah. It sounds like a joke, but it's serious. And I read it. I was like, oh, my God. It opened up my mind. And Bill James was doing things like comparing players... Yogi Berra to Bill Dickey, these two great Yankees catchers of the past. and saying, yeah, Bill Dickey hit for this batting average and drove in all these runs, but he did it in the context of an era where runs were cheaper than when Barrow was. Barrow was actually a better hitter, and he explained why. In the context of his league, he had a more valuable bat. So what I'm saying about Steph is this. Whether or not he's just as good as he was in 15-16, in the regular season so far, he's not been as valuable. And I'm isolating value. I'm taking it away from his from just a team thing. I'm saying just Steph's value. And the reason for that is he was showing the world a new way to play basketball in 15-16. There was no one else who played anything like him. But since then, Damian Lillard has approximated Steph. Trae Young's trying to kind of do the same thing. He changed the league. So now he's doing this, which is still amazing, in the context of a league where this is not as unusual as it once was. It's still unusual, but not as unusual as it once was. And therefore, that season was even more valuable. However, in the moment of truth, that year, he was not the regular Steph. He choked in the finals. Fourth quarter, game seven, trying to win a championship with the best record of all time. Fourth quarter, 4 minutes, 22 seconds to go to beat the signature player of the era, LeBron James. His team didn't score a single point. He was throwing behind the back passes out of bounds. He was not taking shots, missing shots. This Steph, this year, has a chance to be more clutch. Because when last seen in the finals, the latest version of Steph in the finals was draining threes against Kawhi and Toronto and stealing a game at Oracle in a game that looked like they were going to lose. So Steph has a chance now to play them into the playoffs and maybe start hitting big shots in the playoffs, unlike in 15-16. It's not that he didn't have any good playoff games, but as a whole, he was a lesser version of himself in those playoffs. What if he's a greater version of himself this year? Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN NFL draft analyst, now joins me on the Goodyear Hotline. Mel!
Max, I just turned on my computer. I did a podcast with Todd McShay and Field Yates, and I see Max Kellerman all over my computer screen.
Why is that?
They said you had the Giants trading up for Daniel Jones.
No, trading up for
a quarterback to replace Daniel. I said for a quarterback to replace Daniel Jones, or right, compete with Daniel Jones.
This is what I said. The question on First Take was, should the Giants trade up to get a quarterback? And what I said was this, Mel. If Trey Lance falls to, say, 9, and the Giants don't have to expend enormous draft capital to move up a couple slots, I would. And the reason I would is because I believe Daniel Jones has a chance to be a good quarterback. I don't see greatness. I see goodness. I think Trey Lance, while it's more speculative, has at least a chance to be a great one down the line. Why not grab him, put him behind Daniel Jones? It's Daniel Jones' team. You see the next year or two if Daniel Jones can do it. If he can, great. If not, you have another guy who's ready to play maybe at a higher level. That's why. That's what I said.
Here's the problem with that thought process, Max, is the general manager, Dave Gettleman, drafted Daniel Jones. He's tied to Daniel Jones. He's going to try to help Daniel Jones or help this football team get to a level where they can win football games and maybe win a division with Daniel Jones, a quarterback, rather than drafting the heir apparent to Daniel Jones, who would be the quarterback for the next GM to decide about. Yep. So that's why, again, it all ties in that. Now, you can say, well, if I was a GM, would you have drafted Daniel Jones? Well, if you say Daniel Jones is on this team, so it's hard to do those types of things for that reason. But Dave Gettleman is certainly going to try to help this team. Daniel Jones can be a really good quarterback in this league. They got to start catching the football. And the main thing is, before we finish up on the Giants, is the offensive line. If that group isn't fixed, it's not fixed, but tremendously improved over last year, then they're going to have no chance, and they'll move on from their GM, they'll move on from their quarterback, and they'll all be start over with the Giants.
Listen, Mel Kiper Jr., that's exactly right. What you just described is, hey, Max, this is why sports teams are not run more efficiently. Because the reality is the incentives are perverse. Guys are incentivized to keep their job instead of making the optimal decisions. I agree with that. That wasn't the question on First Take, but I totally agree with what you just said. Now, the Giants have been trying for 10 years. More? No, 10 years now. 10 years to get the offensive line right. They haven't been able to do it. So here's another shot to do it. I want to talk about the 49ers, Mel. What I don't understand is this. It seemed like if you looked at the Vegas odds, oh, they're going to draft Mac Jones. Then they flipped Justin Fields. He's the favorite to be drafted by the Niners. How does this work? Like, you don't expend all that draft capital, move up to three, and not know who you're going to take. So why is it that the odds are flipping, do you think, from Mac Jones to Justin Fields?
Well, the odds are flipping, Max, based on what Vegas hears and sees with pro days and interest from a coach. Kyle Shanahan tweaks the footwork and the shotgun of Justin Fields, and all of a sudden that's a tip-off that that could be their guy. Second pro day, wasn't there for the first pro day, this and that. They're just reacting to Twitter chatter, things that go on. That's all they can do. So they're kind of adjusting on the fly with that. Where's the trending with the fans? Where's the trending on Twitter? And what's happening to maybe allow that trend to happen? So to me, that's what it's all about. The 49, I'm with you 100% on, if you're trading up from 12 to 3, you better identify who you're going up to get. And obviously Zach Wilson, everybody kind of knew was maybe going to be a Jet, and then you better have a quarterback or two next in line that you're going to love at number 3. And we believed it was Mac Jones or Trey Lance when that trade was made, not Justin Fields. So that's their feeling. That's what you have to go by from what you're hearing from the league sources that you have. So I think it's going to be either Mac Jones or Trey Lance, not Justin Fields at 3.
Right. And meantime, what do you think? Okay, so if it is Mac Jones at 3, who goes? Now we're talking about the Falcons at 4. They don't draft Matt Ryan's successor, correct?
Right.
Okay. The Bengals.
Well, if you say they don't, I don't know if that's for sure. If you're saying they don't, then what your question is, where does Trey Lance fall?
Yes, that's what I'm getting to. The Bengals have Joe Burrow. So where does Trey Lance wind up going?
We did. Todd and McShay and I, we're going to have a TV show today, about this, and we just did a podcast about a 3-round mock, picking as if we were the GM for each team, Max. And that's where, again, you look at Mac Jones, and if he dropped a little bit, who would trade up to get him? I think New England would. But let's say, okay, in a mock draft, if he goes 3 and Trey Lance drops, how about Denver at 9? I picked in this mock draft, Max, Trey Lance at 9 for the Denver Broncos. I think it's a great win-win. If Drew Lock in another this year, because Trey Lance wouldn't be ready to compete for that job. Drew Lock emerges, great. If he doesn't, then you have Trey Lance in year 2, which will be 2022, ready to roll, and let's see if he can get it done. And if he can't, then everybody starts over again, and then we reset the clock. But I think a great landing spot for Trey Lance would be Denver, and if Mac Jones doesn't go 3 and Trey Lance instead goes 3, Max, I would be shocked if New England, and I projected this trade, I had New England going up from 15 to 7 with the Detroit Lions to get Mac Jones, yep. Detroit dropping down to 15 and still getting a linebacker like Micah Parsons, who's arguably one of the best defensive players, if not the best defensive player in this draft.
Okay, now talking to Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN NFL draft expert, of course. And by the way, if you hear Mel Kiper's voice, you don't know it's Mel Kiper. I know Dick Vitale, Mel Kiper, a couple of people, Howard Cosell back in the day. Everyone knows Mel Kiper Jr.'s voice. It's distinctive. Mel, do you see what you just did? Do you see what you just did? People look at me like I have 6 heads because today I said if I were the Giants and I only had to move up a slot or two to grab Trey Lance and stick it behind Daniel Jones and then see if Daniel Jones pans out or not. If so, great. I have a great problem. I have 2 quarterbacks. If not, great. I have my quarterback, right? That's a preposterous statement by me. And yet you have the Broncos in a similar situation to the Giants doing exactly that. Why does that make sense?
Well, because Daniel Jones has shown better than Locke. I mean, I think he's shown when he was healthy this year, and he showed at different stages of his career that if he gets some balls caught by Evan Engram and company, and guys stay healthy, and the line does their job, that he's got a chance. And remember, this GM drafted him. The GM in Denver did not draft Drew Locke. Okay, that's right. A big difference right there. This GM drafted him, Max. The GM in Denver, as I say, did not. So he can go out and say a win-win there. Dave Gettleman's not going to do that. He's going to stick with his guy. No. He's going to stick with Daniel Jones and try to hope that that line and everybody around him gets better and they have a productive draft to help on both sides of the ball. What Denver's looking to do, I think, at 9, and they've already given this away. They tried to get Matthew Stafford. They didn't get him, right? They tried to get Sam Darnold. They didn't get him. They want a guy who can compete with Drew Lock or be better. Why, Max? Because they're in a division with Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr. They got to get better at quarterback. And if Drew Lock's not the guy, then plan B better be the guy. Or if plan B is not the guy, then we got to start all over with a new GM and a new organization. So that's why it's a little bit different with Denver than it is with the Giants.
It's unbelievable, as long as John Elway was there, that you know, of all people, he can't find a quarterback. right? Like the franchise can't find a quarterback.
Ironic too, Max. When you think about it, Ozzie Newsome's a Hall of Fame GM, great GM in Baltimore. They couldn't draft receivers, and Ozzie Newsome was a great bad guy. So you always say a lot of great baseball players weren't great managers. So again, you look at it and you say, okay, that has been. But hey, when did John Elway win a Super Bowl? He won it at the end of Peyton Manning's career when they won it with defense. So again, you look at it, that's exactly right. That doesn't mean just because you were great at a position that you can identify and figure out who can play that same position at a high level coming out of college.
Yeah, although they get to two Super Bowls and win one, like they get there with offense and then change the whole team, and when Peyton Manning's not good anymore, win it with defense, and yet they can't like get a quarterback to save their lives in the draft.
You know what happened there, Max? What happened there, this is what happened. I said this, you have to be in sync in terms of the way things go. They drafted Paxton Lynch. It didn't work. And that affected the next year when Josh Allen was sitting there. They said, okay, accuracy issues, big guy, strong arm. We can't do that. We're going to go for the safe guy, Case Keenum. And that didn't work. And look at you imagine if Josh Allen was in Denver? So, again, that's where one mistake affects your next decision.
And development. Development, development, Mel, the development of players. You can't tell me that the Giants strike out every time on offensive linemen. They're having a problem developing these guys. It's identifying talent and developing.
Well, they also, Max, drafted a guy with third, fourth pick last year that was projected to go behind the three guys that went ahead of them. So when you look at where Jedrick Wills, you look where Mekhi Becton and a guy like Tristan Wirfs are right now, and you see where Andrew Thomas is, he wasn't projected. That was a stretch. That was a chance they took when a left tackle would play that position over guys who were rated more highly going into that draft.
Yep. So meantime, the Ravens GM makes a comment today, Mel. I want to get your opinion on this.
Sure.
Where he says, when people criticize the receivers, fans criticize the receivers, I think our receivers are good, don't criticize them, whatever. And my point about this is, I understand he's protecting his team, but he's kind of also protecting himself in a way. Like, I haven't done a bad job drafting receivers. And I take it as sort of like, everyone knows the Ravens don't have a good receiving core. I mean, they're one of the worst receiving cores in the league. So I take it as a thing, is it, in the broadest kind of sense, is it Lamar Jackson or is it the receivers' fault that the passing game isn't better? And Mel, don't tell me both, because obviously it's both. But if you have to say, what's the primary culprit in Baltimore, receivers or Lamar Jackson?
I think the point of emphasis is the run game, Max. And when you're run-centric and everything about you, your line, your backs, your everything, tight ends, H-backs, and your Ricard, the big 305-pound, everything about you is pounded. The run, that's what your emphasis is. And that's why to say you're going to be a multi-dimensional offense when you have Lamar and you're so run-centric, and they've said that. They bump up. We're not going to stop. Why couldn't they get Kenny Golladay or T.Y. Hilton or Juju Smith-Schuster for less money than they signed with other players? Because they knew they have to block there in Baltimore. You got to block. Receivers don't want to do that exclusively, Max. Mm. So, again, that's why they have to draft one. You draft them, then you're guaranteed they're coming there. That's why I have Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU becoming a Baltimore Raven. So what Eric DaCosta was saying is, hey, we got some good. We're not able to showcase it yet. Greg Roman, the coordinator. Think about Sammy Watkins coming in. Watkins had a career year with Greg Roman up in Buffalo. We'll see how he does. He was a late signing in free agency. Let's face it, Hollywood Brown has had his moments, but he's been really good. What they need is Boykin to step up, and they have Duvernay and Prochet from last year's draft have to get better, and I think they will draft a receiver or two this year. But I think the fact of the matter is they are unlike any other team in the NFL, how they are so run-oriented and run-centric, where in the NFL these days, everybody's throwing it all over the yard. That's not their mode of operation, and it will not be moving forward.
Well, that is a tremendous answer out of Mel Kiper Jr. Of course, I'll just point out, if these receivers were any good other than Hollywood Brown, who's fine but not a number one, Dez Bryant wouldn't have gotten burned over them. I mean, the remains of Dez Bryant got burned over the young guys you mentioned. The great Mel Kiper Jr., ladies and gentlemen. Mel, I know how busy you are this time of year, so I very much appreciate it that you jump on with me for a few minutes. Thank you, brother.
Anytime, Max. You take care, pal. Have a great day, bud.
The great Mel Kiper Jr. Can't wait for his final mock draft. If you had a $1 million bill, where would you try to spend it? It's time for some straight talk. Sure, money, saving money feels good, of course. Cutting your wireless bill in half? I'm going to speak English for the rest of this read. Cutting your wireless bill in half feels really good. Like walk-off home run in the ninth inning. Good. All right, maybe not that good, but pretty good. With Straight Talk, you can get 25 gigs of high-speed data for $45 a month, up to 50% less than the other guys. Plus, no contract, all on America's best networks. So why pay a whole lot when you can pay half? Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Dumbest crime you've ever heard of. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. First, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Two Tennessee women who were caught in Maryville near the Knoxville area of Blount County tried to pay for their purchases at a Dollar General store with a $1 million bill. One of the women, Amanda McCormick, told police she received the $1 million bill in the mail from a church, that's a quote, but could not provide the church information. They went to a general store in Tennessee and tried to pay for something with a $1 million bill. How are they going to? They see, what they were figuring is when the dollar store in Tennessee makes change. Let's see what we have here. We have $12.93 purchase, leaving $999,000. Like, what is the dumbest crime you've ever heard of? That was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise.
No. See, I think you're missing. I think they went to the dollar store because they went to spend a dollar. They wasn't wasting nay dollars of that $1 million. They wanted all of it.
Yeah.
I think they only bought something for a dollar. Not even you said 12.
They want $999,000.
They wanted every single dollar of that $1 million bill back.
Or maybe there was stuff they needed at the dollar store, Raj. Maybe they're like, yo, we're going to come off, get like $100 worth of stuff. We're going to get 100 different things at the dollar store and still have $999,900 at least.
I think they went straight for all of it. They wasn't wasting nothing. No tax.
See, we all pay stupid tax in life, right? Like, you get a. I remember when I was in LA, and we were at LA Live doing the show, doing Sports Nation, and doing Max and Marcellus. Rod, you produced that show, obviously. And sometimes, like, I would get a parking pass because I forgot my thing for the garage. And then I would forget I have the parking pass, and I have to pay like $20 to get out of the garage, right? Like, and I realized when that happened, and it's not exactly even the details of the story. I just remember being out $20 and thinking, you can't even be mad, Max. You just paid a stupid tax, right? Like, there are stupid taxes in life. But taking a $1 million bill, and I, you know what, Roger? I'm starting to suspect it wasn't even a real $1 million bill. I don't know. It sounds to me like it may not have been a real $1 million bill. By the way, who's on the $1 million bill? Is there one? Axe Max is brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app.
Axe Max.
Yeah, right. John in New Mexico, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. What you got to ask me? Or do you have to tell me? Or do you have a dumbest crime ever story?
I do, Max. So there was this criminal on the run and took an ill-advised approach towards the Gwent police. Mm. He posted himself on Facebook where he was around his house. He said, ha-ha, catch me if you can. And later on that day, the police caught him drawing attention around his neighborhood.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb. I mean, that's along the lines of like you see in the movies, this burglar, a certain kind of cat burglar, wants to leave a calling card. Because they think they're being slick and it leads to their arrest, right? But this $1 million bill thing is a whole new level of stupid. That's unbelievable. You take it to you didn't even take it to like some crazy, which would be almost as stupid, but maybe not quite, crazy high-end store on Madison Avenue and bought $100,000 worth of things, tried to pay. Yeah. You took it to a dollar store in Tennessee.
Now, Max, not that I have any experience in anything like this or hung around with some questionable characters, but if you're going to do such a thing, you go to a dark bar, get a beer, a drink, and pay cash, and then the waitress gives you back some change, and you take off after your drink. That's what you would do. Not saying I've done anything like that or know anybody that has.
Officers, his name is Raj Grobes. You can See him if you have ESPN Plus. I'm going to sell some ESPN Plus right now. Officers, just subscribe to ESPN Plus. You'll see his forehead. You can identify him by his forehead alone on ESPN Plus. It's Raj Grobes, although that's not his government name. Lewis in Connecticut, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Dumbest crime ever possible. Parking in Jim Calhoun's parking spot at the University of Connecticut.
Who did?
And it was
you
a
did?
Lamborghini. No, I didn't. Somebody parked a Lamborghini at Jim Calhoun's parking spot, and I missed an entire class watching it get towed. It was worth it.
It was worth it, of course. What a jerk. A Lamborghini in Coach's parking spot. Andre in Massachusetts. What's going on, Andre?
What's going on, Max? No good parking in Coach Cal's spot there. You know, he's not That's giving right. a dime back. He's not playing around. Coach Calhoun's from the Boston area, Dorchester. To the point, Max, just want to chime in quickly on Steph Curry for MVP. Yep. Historic numbers for sure, Max, but he's the ninth place in the West. And we know that Kobe would have won that MVP in 05, averaging 35 points a game. They had to give it to Steve Nash because the Lakers weren't a good team. So we can't give it to Steph this year.
Well, I don't believe in following mistakes with another mistake because that set the precedent. You know, out of fairness, we need to make more mistakes. I don't believe in that, Andre. Andre always has a smart call, but I disagree with your conclusion here. I think that you can measure value with Steph by asking yourself, how many wins would the team have without him? You know, like, I love this. You have to understand, like, in baseball, they used to do this. Well, they could have finished in last place with or without him. So if he's on a last place team, he can't be MVP. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. There's already a team award. It's called the playoffs. You go to the playoffs, right? Or your record is the team award. But if you have a player who's worth 10 wins and his team only won 50 games, you want to give it to a player who's worth 7 wins because his team won 95 games? The guy was less valuable than the 10-win player. I'm just saying that my argument against MVP is something different. What I'm saying is if you're an MVP-caliber player, it is so unlikely that you miss at least the play-in game that why don't we wait till the end of the playoffs to give out MVP? But as long as we're giving regular season MVP awards, Steph's on a 500 team. That would be – how many wins would they have without him? I absolutely think he should be in consideration. I wouldn't give it to him right now because I think Jokic has had a little better season, and so has Lillard by a little bit. Gary Sheffield said something about today's baseball. He ain't wrong. We're going to get into it. UFC 261 is a can't-miss event. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of UFC, is giving all players a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Just pick 6 fighters, stay under the salary cap. By the way, it makes watching more fun. Pick 6 players, stay under the salary cap, and you pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, and not to mention compete against your friends. Download the DraftKings app and use code MAX. Use code MAX to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's code MAX only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Plus more calls on dumb crimes. The Max Kellerman Show.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. I'm part of the reason that Gary Sheffield doesn't like baseball nowadays. I got to admit that. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Did you miss any of the Max Kellerman Show today here on April 20th? Here on 420. I'm starting to make a connection between this music that Brendan is playing and the date. Wait a minute. You can hear my enemy, Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager. Stole a base against my beloved Yankees in 2004 that ultimately led to an epic collapse against the worst thing in the world, which is the Boston Red Sox. At any rate, he is my sports enemy, but he agreed to come on this show and talk to me. He is a gentleman, although my enemy. You can always find both hours of the show posted daily as a podcast, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Gary Sheffield said on CBS Sports Radio, "I don't watch baseball at all." Told told CBS Sports Radio's Tiki and Tierney, the Tiki and Tierney show, on Friday. I was kind of forced to watch baseball because I was working with TBS, and so I had to remember, really find out who were these players. I'll tell you a secret now. I never watched the games during the season. I get educated on it when I got there. It's not something that I could watch based on what I'm seeing because I'll be a complainer. This is the first time I've ever said that out loud, but I'm just truly disappointed with what I watch. Like, I understand. He's talking about how much guys strike out. It's a three true outcomes game. There's not that much negative value in a strikeout, really. There is some, but it's offset largely by the fact that you're running up the pitcher's pitch count. Usually you're not just striking out on three pitches. That the trade-off is that you're trying to hit for more power usually, and frequently you do. You know, launch angles, guys want to get that underspin so it carries with some loft. And so the three true outcomes, meaning this is just between the pitcher, the catcher, and the hitter, are strikeouts, walks, and home runs. And largely, that's what the game is about nowadays. And the reason it's like that is because people like me, little smarty pants, Bill James, you know, this is how you play it more efficiently. Look, the fact of the matter is, I'm not bragging, I'm not exaggerating. This is not hyperbolic. In 1998, 99, 97, I could have walked in off the street to a Major League Baseball front office. I'd have been a top five GM day one because there were so many GMs who just didn't know what they're doing. I would never say that nowadays. No way I could be a GM nowadays. Because everyone's got degrees from MIT and a whole staff of people from Stanford. And, you know, they're smart now. It's hard now. But back then, simple stuff. Hey, you know, that second baseman who you like the way he plays the game has a 250 on-base percentage. Maybe you don't lead him off. You know, that other guy who you don't like the way he can't charge the bunt at third base, but he has a 400 on-base percentage. And, you know, maybe he's at $1 million a year. Maybe that's a good bargain. You know, stuff like that. And Kevin Millar was getting on a plane going to Japan when the Red Sox signed him. Brian Kenny of MLB Network, and I used to do Friday Night Fights together on ESPN2. At commercial breaks, we just talk baseball all the time, right? And every player that we identified, why don't this team get him? Those are all the players that, like, the Red Sox started collecting when they hired Bill James and Theo Epstein. At any rate, the problem with all that sabermetrics is that it turns out the most efficient way to play baseball is not very consumer-friendly. So you got to change some rules to make a better product. You know, in MMA, in the UFC, turns out the most efficient way to fight, two guys are rolling around, jockeying for slight nuanced positions for 15 minutes at a time. Consumers didn't like it. They changed the rules. All right, guys, stand up. So, you know, whoops, sorry, I ruined baseball. I was one of the people who did, apparently. Now Sheffield can't watch. I don't blame him. It's not as good a product as it used to be. Fred in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
I believe the largest denomination on a single U.S. bill was the $100,000 bill with President Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson's on the $100,000 bill. I may have known that at some point, but not right now. So thank you for that information. $100,000. I wonder who they put on the $1 million bill. Because the story is that two women walked into a dollar store in Tennessee trying to legit break $1 million bill they claimed the church had sent them. Woodrow Wilson on the $100,000 bill. That's a pretty big bill. How many $100,000 bills do they even print? It's like Bill Gates and Bezos and Warren Buffett. $100,000 bill. They can't even think in denominations below $100,000. Tyler in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Hey, Max, taking time. Caller, appreciate the time. The dumbest crimes I keep seeing more and more, and they get funnier every time, are these adults that keep trying to go into these public places without a mask, acting like children, and then getting arrested. Well, yeah, that place specifically says you need a mask. So,
yeah. It's like celebrities who got in trouble because they were convinced, actually, nowhere in the Constitution does it say I have to pay taxes. I'm going to stop paying taxes. And then they went to jail, right? People get it in their heads. They get bad information. They go, actually, you don't have to wear a mask. But if you want to go in there, you do. No, I don't. It says that. And then they get locked up. Mitch in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
How's it going, Max? Good show. Dodgers, I think they're going to repeat. But I'm probably the only one that didn't agree with that Trevor Bauer sign because they didn't need him. They have so many good young pitchers.
Yep.
Now I don't want to see Corey Seager go. What are you thinking? Thanks again.
I think the I couldn't understand half the words you said, but I would say that I think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series this year, it looks like. Let's take it out with Richard in Manhattan. You got 20 seconds, Richard.
Hi, Max. NBA Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Thibodeau,
mm-hmm.
the coach of Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
or the coach of Utah?
That is a good question. Whew. Might be Tibbs. Might be Tibbs with what he's working with. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.